You are listening to a sermon by John Conrad, recorded on Sunday, February 7th, 2010, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
I appreciate the choice of songs, and the last time I listened to Mark Mitrija, which I think was last night, he promised sunshine this afternoon, so, you know, maybe the spirits will lift again. Henry asked if I would share a little bit about my encounter with mental illness, and then link that to the role of the church based on my experience and also outside of that in relation to some of what I've learned. In the winter and spring of 1994, which is going on 16 years, I found myself becoming increasingly agitated, wanting to withdraw from people, discouraged in my work, and feeling a general malaise and a sense of both helplessness and hopelessness. Now, it was during the 6 years prior to that that I experienced an unusual number of losses. It started with the loss, a sudden loss of a brother-in-law at age 65, and then a few years later, another brother-in-law who died not suddenly but within a month of being diagnosed. I had lost my job at virtually the pinnacle of my career, according to some, which of course meant the loss of security, position, and influence. I also lost a number of colleagues to premature death. Both of my parents died during that time. And because of the loss of my employment, I was moving from one employment opportunity to another, most of my own searching, but never knowing where I would end up next because these were all short-term assignments. And by this time I was into my middle 50s, which made it that much more difficult. And during all of these losses, I was also giving myself with great energy to the local Abbotsford Hospice Society. And in thinking back, I wondered if I was tending to the grief process of other people and neglecting my own. At work, while my efforts seemed all for naught, I was asked to take on additional responsibilities, and with the approaching holiday season, was soon covering for several other managers, as well as two jobs of my own. My sense of competency began to wane, and my confidence to achieve was totally gone. I was convinced that I was burning out, as they say, and simply needed to go on holiday, which was scheduled for early summer, so I was very hopeful of being okay. We finally got to a favorite camping site on Whidbey Island, where I had a complete meltdown. I couldn't sleep, and I cried uncontrollably. Our two adult oldest children arrived over the next couple of days, and when our eldest son joined us, he said, "We're going home, and we're taking you to see the doctor." So I went to see my doctor, who had known me for about 30 years, and as quickly as he walked into the room, he said, "I'm going to refer you to a psychiatrist." And I said, "I don't even like those people. I work with them. And I don't even know a good one. I wouldn't know where to begin." He said, "You can leave that to me. I'll find you the best one available." And So he gave me a prescription. He said, this will possibly help tide you over until you get to see the psychiatrist, which could be, you know, 6 weeks or a couple of months. After the weekend, having taken the medication for a few days, I said to Catherine, I'm going to go back to work. And I said to myself, what was all that about? So I went to work, and Monday wasn't too bad. Tuesday was pretty grim. By Wednesday, I wasn't sure why I was there, and I left early Thursday and never went back. Literally, never went back to that job. It just went downhill from there for several months. As some of you may have experienced, switching meds because the choice of medication, psychotropic medication, is still a bit of a crapshoot. It's not like an antibiotic that treats an infection with a direct cause and effect. One medication may work perfectly well for you, for me, and not have any effect on you, or perhaps even negative side effects that you can't cope with. And so I kept spinning through one medication after another, but at that time, most of the psychotropic medications were still of the kind that you had to have a drying out period for a couple of weeks in between. And those couple of weeks turned out to be absolute hell. And with every cycle, I kept getting worse. I had all the classic symptoms of depression, as I had mentioned earlier. And didn't want to eat. Lost 30 pounds. Lost my physical strength. My ability to speak clearly. Couldn't sleep at night, usually for less than an hour. And became increasingly suicidal. Now, while I had promised Catherine that I would not take my life, which I thought would help, I got to the point where I had to admit to her that I wasn't sure if I would be able to keep that promise. I actually thought about how I could accomplish that night and day, and as I mentioned, I was awake almost 24 hours a day. And I had this continuous excruciating pain in my chest and in my head that I had no way of getting rid of other than just ending it all, thinking that that would have been the most peaceful and desirable thing to do. And so it was at this point that I told Catherine and my children that there wasn't another decision that I could make, and so it was over to them. So Catherine phoned the psychiatrist, whom she had become quite familiar with by that time, and said, what do we do now? And he said, it's time for hospitalization. For my safety, and for closer observation and hopefully some intervention that might work. I had become convinced at that point that I would lose absolutely everything. My possessions, my career, my pension, my friends, my family, and told my pastor that I would probably end up under the Granville Street Bridge living in a cardboard box. That was my reality. And Roland, God bless him, said to me, you know, with all the friends and family that you have that love you and care for you, I don't think that will happen. But if it does, we will be there with you. So to make a long story short, I ended up in the Abbotsford psychiatric unit, which is not where I wanted to be. I thought if I had to go to a psychiatric hospital, I at least wanted to get into Vancouver General. But that didn't work out, and I won't go into the details of that for you. I was in the hospital for just under a month, and while there, personally felt very little change. Although the psychiatrist finally found a medication that seemed to begin lifting me out of clinical depression, which I was diagnosed with, and acute anxiety. Now, the nursing staff and others, and Catherine as well, could see some progress, even though I couldn't feel it. Upon my release, I convalesced at home and experienced what I can only describe as continued unconditional love from my family, my friends, my pastor, our church friends, and my colleagues. My lack of will to live was overpowered by theirs and by their prayers. A couple of months later, I began showing interest in returning to work, and when I inquired of a former colleague, he said there was a special project that someone was leaving and he thought I would be ideally suited for. So I called the deputy minister, who had also been a former colleague, who asked when I would like to start. And I said, well, I think I'll be ready in about 6 weeks or whatever. And I've been off work for about half a year by this time. And it was a provincial assignment, and so generally those would have occurred from Victoria. And he said, where would you like to work from? And I said, actually, I'd like to work for my study at home. And he said, fine, we'll set you up there, and you can do it from there. And I said, well, by the way, I said, my doctor says I should probably take a rest every day at noon or during the day because I was still quite weak. And he said, that's fine, you just have your nap and do your job as best you can, and we'll carry on. I could only think that God had been preparing these colleagues of mine for my recovery, because I had no idea, absolutely no idea, where I would end my career or whether I would ever get back to work. And so I was both grateful and deeply moved by the care given to me through God by people. And so as I reflect on this time in my life, a relapse 3 years later, after I'd been on medication, the doctor thought I should try functioning without it, and did so successfully for a year, when within a 24-hour period, all of the symptoms that I had before, both of depression and anxiety, returned. Now I was really fearful because I knew the road ahead. So I was able to see my doctor the next day, went back on medication, and was stabilized within a month, and have remained so since, that would have been 1988, so that's 12 years ago. So when I reflect on that experience and recall the scriptures that we read together this morning, I see both in Isaiah and in the Apostle Peter this willingness to recognize our brokenness. The fact that we are human, we can be frail, we can be weak, we can suffer, and it does not detract one iota from our value in God's sight, and shouldn't in the sight of our fellow human beings. Jeremiah says the Lord will bring us back from our captivity or our suffering. He has plans for our welfare, a future of hope. Now, depression is a very common illness, and in fact, the research indicates that it's going to show up in 1 out of 4 or 5 people, 1 or 4 or 5 people, which literally means it's going to show up somewhere in every family. The irony is that while it's the most prevalent, it's also the most treatable of all mood disorders, but continues to have the highest rate of suicide. Now there's a puzzle. But it's not really. Because of course, as Henry read us the bite from the internet, when we go to church, we are happy, we are successful, we have it all together, right? Wrong. We don't. But very often, we don't show that side of ourselves. And so you folks, like we at Highland, are very fortunate that you have the courage and the vulnerability to show that side of ourselves. The psalmist said, "Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you preserve my life. You stretch out your hand against the anger of my foes and save me." Now, the psalmist had enemies of many kind, particularly a family. But we have other kinds of enemies as well. Enemies of ill health and disaster and calamity and so on. Now I'm going to take just a minute to make a reference to the response of our church and then leave some time for some discussion and questions that you might have. Now I've already mentioned the role of my pastor, who was faithful in visiting and keeping in touch. Prior to my hospitalization, he would often come by and help me into his car, and we'd go to Westminster Abbey behind Mission. He'd help me climb three flights of stairs to a beautiful, peaceful lounge where we would overlook the mountains and Mathqui and De Roche Valley. And I would invariably lie down on a bench. By that time, I was so exhausted I couldn't sit. And he would sit with me and maybe read something or sing a song or just not say anything. And it was a beautiful time of sanctuary. The church arranged for a clinical therapist to provide an evening of information and education about depression and anxiety, help people understand what I and my family were going through. Some of the group studied mental illness using John Tave's book, No Longer Alone. And in the church generally, after I returned, I felt complete acceptance. I felt unconditional love. There were no inappropriate questions or suspicions or fears or suggestions that I might have been weak in my faith or hadn't prayed hard enough or was hiding some secret sin. Opportunity to speak of my encounter with the dark night was provided. There is a recognition that we are all frail at times, vulnerable and in need of care, and encouragement to speak honestly and with integrity. And to quote our former pastor, Roland Balser, if we are going to welcome and include each other when we don't have it all together, our time with each other needs to allow for not having it all together. So we try to resist the temptation to put on a good show. We risk some untidiness in our lives, including in our worship. It doesn't all have to be perfect or slick. So with that, I'd like to just mention that a few years ago, we received in our church mail a couple of brochures describing the living room, which is a support group for people with mood disorders formed or created by Maria Bergen, who is living in Burnaby and has struggled most of her life with bipolar, which is depression and euphoria, previously known as manic depressive. And immediately I said to the elders, we need to do this. We need to form a group for people with mood disorder. And so the following fall, in September of 2008, we started a group. And you have a brochure there describing some of that. And it has become both a ministry to the church, the people of the church, but also mostly a ministry to people in the community. Of the 43 that we had in the first year, only two were from our congregation, so it has become a service to the community, and we have been delighted to be able to provide this service and to realize that out of our weakness, God can offer something not only for our benefit, but for the benefit of other people. Thank you.